Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. Yes, we haven't done one of these in a while. This is where we talk all the insider stuff about USC Trojan football recruiting with Gerard Martinez. Follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. He's all over the peristyle over at USCFootball.com. This is our premium recruiting podcast just for our members. Do apologize, it's been a little while. Not a ton going on, I guess you could say, with recruiting. What's up, Gerard? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Yeah, it's been a little quiet on the recruiting trail, but that's sort of prototypical USC at this time of year. Things won't start to heat up until May evaluations, and then you get in the summer. But, you know, really, USC kind of paces themselves towards the end of the season when it comes to recruiting. So a lot of scholarship offers, the guys that are just names, and, you know, whether USC actually follows up with a lot of scholarship offers remains to be seen. But they did get a commitment last week from a wide receiver, three-star right now by 24/7 Sports, Manur McLean, who is the brother of Abdul Malik McLean, who was a defensive end signee, a four-star out of J. Sarah High School in San Juan Capistrano, and teammate and younger brother, wide receiver, big body, 6'4", 215 pounds, definitely a really good player on film. I think the hesitation with him, with some schools, and even with USC to some extent, is that he blew his ACL last season, so he's still recovering from that. I think he's going to start jogging here in the next couple weeks. And so he hasn't really done anything this offseason. We haven't really seen him move very much since his surgery. And so that's going to be the big question. But certainly smart kid, great physical body just in terms of his frame and his strength, the way he plays receiver, a guy that you could look at and say, hey, maybe he puts on some weight like his brother. He ends up playing more tight end. But, you know, what he's put on film right now as a receiver has been very good. So that's technically the first 2019 commit, although we can look at JT Daniels was really the first 2019 commit before he reclassified. And certainly from the quarterback position, he was far and away the best player at that position. There's a big gap between JT Daniels and the next best guy in the 2019 class. So after his reclassification, now we look at Manur McLean as the first 2019 commit. USC also got a walk-on commit from a punter in Australia, but that is not a scholarship right now. So right now, Manur McLean is number one, the first guy on the board for USC for 2019.
And shout out to his mom and Abdul, their mom, Shan McLean. So she's very active on Twitter. You can check her out. She's pretty fun to follow. You follow her at all, Gerard?
Yeah, she posts some stuff with the boys and, you know, just with the unofficial visits and, of course, the in-home visits that Abdul Malik had last year with USC. You know, they posted a lot of stuff, so always interesting to keep up. And, you know, really good family, smart kids, they're really good students. And I think that's kind of one of the big things. It's certainly a gamble a little bit for USC, seeing the ACL and that Manur has not really done a whole lot since that ACL, but you're looking at a low maintenance, smart kid. I think, you know, comes from a good school. He has really good film, pre-surgery. It's one of those things that I see where he, and you look at a guy like Brew McCoy, who's kind of similar in terms of his body and has that same kind of ability as a possession receiver, probably a little quicker, a little more explosive. Certainly off the line of scrimmage, we've talked about Brew McCoy and sort of why he's ranked as a five-star athlete. But Brew, you know, a lot of people look at him and say, hey, he could be an outside linebacker at the next level. He could be another Anthony Barr type. Greg Biggins, our national recruiting analyst, 24/7 Sports, is very big on Brew playing defense in college. And so, you know, that's kind of a little bit of an asterisk next to Brew's name. Personally, I've seen him play receiver enough that I say, bring him on. I mean, I saw what happened with Juju Smith, and Juju proved me wrong because I thought 100% Juju Smith was going to be a safety. He'd be a guy that was going to play Sundays, and I thought the move receiver with him, he might be a bit limited. He might not actually reach his full potential. And I mean, I guess you could still argue perhaps he never will reach his full potential because we'll never see him play safety at a higher level than high school because he was that dominant of a safety in high school. But he was pretty damn good at USC as a receiver, and he's been pretty damn good for Pittsburgh in the NFL thus far. And so that's a guy that, you know, kind of proved me wrong in terms of where his best position would be, or at least where he could strive and get to the highest level of football. And you look at Brew McCoy and you look at guys like Manu McClain, you look at those guys, those bigger, stronger receivers, even Kyle Ford from Orange Lou, you could kind of put in there, 6'2", about 205 pounds. They're guys that, you know, they're built like linebackers. They're built like big, strong, almost kind of edge rush type players, but they're playing receiver now. And with Brew, I think just with his footwork, his ability to get off the line of scrimmage really quickly, he's a smart guy. I don't put it past any of those guys to be able to play offense and excel at the next level. So, you know, I think that's sort of going to be where USC is at in terms of what they want. I think they want three receivers in this class. You look at Brew, you look at a guy like Manure, and then maybe, you know, you look for a little smaller, more dynamic player that can play slot, that can do some things in the open field, make some plays with the ball in his hands, being maybe a third guy that they go after. So we'll see how that develops. It's very early in the recruiting process. We know a lot can change from this point on.
Well, let's. I guess we're going to jump right into the questions, Gerard. What do you think?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. It's funny. I said there's a certain word you can say if you have an Amazon device on your desk, and I apparently thought I said that word, and I did not. It woke up the device.
Was it, yeah, let's go?
No.
It was me that said it.
Yeah, I think because I said let's, and it sounded like this woman's name, if you know what I'm talking about. I don't want to say it again because it'll wake up the device, but I'm like something like, I said something like let's go, and it sounded a lot like that name apparently, and it woke up the device. So I apologize for that. Then I spent too much time talking about it. Well, let's go. We had a couple quick ones from Tarek. At least they're concise questions, but they might not be concise answers. How many tight ends do you see USC taking, considering none were taken in the 2018 season?
Nice little subtle dig at me there for non-rapid-fire questions.
I'm just saying.
I think USC is going to take two. Yeah, there's talk like they could really maybe use three. But let's look at it in terms of what USC has done at the tight end position this far. I mean, that's still a position where they need to prove themselves offensively that they can get production out of that position. Certainly, the hiring of Kerry Colbert will help. He's a guy that I think at least will have a voice in the offensive team meetings. He, being a former receiver, is going to be able to see what the receivers are doing from a route concept standpoint and how open they're getting. I think with John Baxter, there was a lot of criticism about the communication with him and with the rest of the coaching staff. And just, I guess, maybe his focus on how the tight end position was being utilized within the offense. He was a part-timer. He was really, I think, focused more on special teams. With Kerry Colbert, I think you're going to get a guy that's really going to see that position, focus on that position, and be able to relay those thoughts to T. Martin and the offensive coaches and perhaps make that a position that can be utilized a little better. The tight end position, I think, in the Pac-12 can be a huge position. I think it's a position that, in terms of mismatches against smaller linebackers, USC could have some advantages. And so, you know, you got guys like Josh Follow. We'll see what happens with Daniel and Mator Bebe. But they've got some talent on the team. It's just a matter of kind of utilizing that talent and then building a little depth behind it. So I think two is fine. I don't think you need to get ahead of yourselves and go after three in this class. Although it's such a deep class, you could, you know, really, in truth, you could sign three and be okay. I just don't think you want to stack it that much. I think you need to spread it out a little more. So we'll see what that happens. There's a bunch of good names out there. I won't list them all because then, you know, the answer will not be as concise as Ryan needs it. But Ethan Ray, Braden Leibrock, there's quite a few guys out there. I think there's probably five or six guys in the West region alone that USC could offer and probably be guys that would come on campus and be productive at that position and at least contribute.
Hayden Leibrock, I saw him in person for the Adidas stuff. Liked him a lot. I thought he was excellent. And he came out to practice recently.
That's where we saw him in person. And he's really more of a receiver. I mean, he's about 220, probably getting that 225 range. But he is certainly that kind of prototypical Pac-12 receiving type tight end. Jude Wolf is another guy that's a huge big body guy, 6'5", 245. I mean, there's a list of guys. Isaiah Foskey is a guy that USC offered twice, evidently. They offered him like last year. I guess they forgot they offered him. They re-offered him, and think in February, another 6'5", 240-pound kid from De La Salle High School who doesn't catch the ball a lot in that offense. But, you know, in a pro-style offense like USC's, you've got guys like Eric Cromenhoek who really you need blocking. I mean, blocking is something that is definitely a big part of the offense and a big part of the true pro style tight end position. And so there's a few guys out there, a handful of guys that are really good players that USC could get their hands on. Like I said, you could go for three and be okay. But I just think that two is probably the better number for them.
All right. Tarek also wanted to know, does USC possibly take two quarterbacks in 2019?
It's going to depend on what happens with the quarterbacks they have on the roster now. We've talked about it a little bit already. If JT Daniels comes in, he takes over the starting position, which would not surprise any of us. Is it one of those situations where Matt Fink and Jack Sears both feel like, okay, well, there's a freshman here that's playing. I don't have as much eligibility as him. I'm gone. So if you lose both of those scholarship quarterbacks, then yeah, you got to recruit two in the 2019 class. Unfortunately, this is one of the worst, if not the worst years for talent that I've seen at the quarterback position since I started doing this. So it's been 15 years and I went through and we created the target list. The initial target list actually just earlier this month. And it's just amazing the lack of just game breaking type players that are out there, whether it be from the pro style position or the actual dual threat quarterbacks. There are just not a lot of really good targets out there. And that's kind of what I talked about just with JT Daniels and him being on campus and being that really technically that first commit of the 2019 class. There's a big gap between him and the next best guy. I was going through that film and watching some of the top guys. And I mean, this is a lot of three stars that are four stars right now that just wouldn't be able to compete with the top, you know, that upper echelon of quarterbacks that were in that 2018 class. 2018 was really good. 2019 is almost just as bad.
Just as bad. Okay. Well, that's probably not good. Well, let's go. Why don't we do a voicemail question, Gerard? Here you go.
JD from DC with this week's recruiting question for Gerard GM. Thanks for the defensive target list update. A couple of follow-up questions. Why is it that it appears USC is not showing a lot of interest or love for Jacob Bandis? No one's surprised at that. Also, at linebacker, given the class.
Oh, for some reason it cut off. I don't know what happened there, but.
Well, the first question was Jacob Bandis. And I think USC's really comfortable with that core group of guys out west that they've already offered scholarships to and are probably higher on their board for good reason than Jacob Bandis. I mean, you look at Fatui Tuatelli, the big defensive tackle from Hawaii St. Louis High School. That's a guy that's been at the top of the board for a long time, a national prospect out of Hawaii, one of the best players to come out of Hawaii in recent memory. And that's a guy that USC circled on. That's a guy that USC has a really good shot at. You know, Oregon, there's a few other schools out there that are battling for him, but USC feels like they're in the thick of it. And that's a five-star player, 6'4", 300 pounds. You want to get that kid. Drake Jackson's a guy that USC actually was a little later on in terms of Pac-12 offers, but a guy that we've seen at both the opening and the Under Armour camp, who was probably the best defensive lineman at both of those camps. I don't know if he won any MVP honors, but watching the film and just watching him perform, 6'4", 260, has a little bit of source Lawrence Jackson in him. He's a big body that's sort of that in-between being a defensive end and a defensive tackle. I think he could easily be a three technique, put on 20 pounds and be that guy. But just subtle, really good athleticism, quick movement, quick twitch, but a guy that has a bigger body. And like I said, you could put him at defensive end. He could be, he's kind of a Christian Rector right now, but a guy that could develop and be a little more of a dominant three technique if he put on a little more pounds. Matthew Polamau, the brother of Isaiah Polamau, another guy, he's about 6'2", about 315, 320, a nose tackle, a kid that we talked to at the opening last year said, you know, basically I'm going to go to USC unless something crazy happens. And so you kind of have to pencil him in as a potential commit to USC, a guy that I think is pretty high on the board for USC as well. Stephen Wright, another guy, 6'3", about 260, 265, probably going to be a defensive tackle. He'll put on some more weight. He'll be in that 290-pound range when he gets on campus. And maybe, you know, after his redshirt freshman year, he'll put on weight really quick. That's another guy that a lot of people say is a lot better than Hunter Echols, who USC signed out of Cathedral High School a couple years ago. And they say he's just much more of a dominant player inside than even Hunter Echols was. And Hunter Echols was pretty good for Cathedral when he came out of high school. He was a really good pure pass rusher at Cathedral High School. So, I mean, you got a long list of guys there that USC is entertaining that are local guys that they should have a good shot at, and guys that really appear to be leaning to USC. So, you know, do you need to really go after a guy from up north who, yeah, was good at the opening, and maybe he's a really good player, but if you feel pretty confident with what you have, I don't know that you necessarily need to make those moves for players in areas that you don't necessarily have a stronghold in.
Let's see. How about David? He said, the number of top prospects with high interest in USC based on Gerard's latest target list seems extraordinary. Assuming the team doesn't fall apart this year, are we looking at a class rivaling some of Pete's best? And who among those with high interest are the closest to being locks? That's from David.
Oh, the word lock. We need like sound effects for certain like words and things that come up in podcasts that we talk about over and over again. And that would be like a great sound effect, the lock sound effect. There's no such thing as locks. We always talk about that. And certainly, assuming if. Anytime you got a sentence, assuming if, got to back away from that sentence because we don't know what's going to happen with USC next year. And certainly, you know, it could go either way. You could end up falling on their faces and it being a bad season. They could have another really good season, have 10, 11 wins. Let's just say if they have 10 or 11 wins, it could be a very, very good recruiting class. It definitely, from a Western regional standpoint, I don't think the 2019 class depth-wise is quite as good as 2018, but as I said before, that core group of really good players, and we're talking about like the top 10s, the top 20s here in the region, that's a really good group. That high-end upper echelon group of recruits is better than the high-end upper echelon group of recruits that was in 2018. So, and really, I mean, you're only going after a class if you can't sign more than 25. So we're talking about a class of probably 22. And so you're going to have, you know, those players. If you can hit on your plan A's, you're going to get those kind of players. So, you know, we talked about, you know, the defensive line. I mean, Drake Jackson, I would say, heavy lean to USC. There's no locks. Heavy lean to USC. Matthew Polamalu, heavy lean to USC. I would even say Stephen Wright is kind of a heavy lean to USC right now. I don't know if I would say Fatui Tuatelli is quite there yet because Oregon is after him and Joe Salamea is up there and they're going to recruit him really hard. And so I think there's a little more of a battle going on for him. I don't know if I would say heavy lean to USC just yet. You could probably say Jude Wolf is maybe a heavy lean to USC. I think that there's work to be done there. And certainly what direction is USC going to go in, you know, with that? Are they going to go in and get a guy and jump in early maybe on one of those tight ends and then kind of wait and see what happens with Ethan Ray? He's coming back from an ACL. See what happens just maybe nationally if there's another guy that creeps up. Braden Leibrock is probably not a heavy USC lean at this point. I think there's going to be a battle between some Midwest schools, maybe even Texas. There'll be a few schools after him. I don't think he's, you know, naturally a heavy lean. But at the quarterback position, I think Jaden Daniels right now, USC's to lose, and the best quarterback in the West region. Even though it's a really down class, probably one of the best quarterbacks, I think, nationally. Jordan Wilmore, 5'8", 200-pound running back, number three running back nationally from Lawndale High School. Another guy that I would say definitely a heavy lean to USC at this point. They've got Manu McClain. I would say that, that Brew McCoy is a heavy lean to USC at this point. Five-star athlete from Modern Day High School. USC obviously recruiting Modern Day High School very well. And I think that's a guy that, you know, we were just kind of hanging out with him a little bit at the last passing tournament, the passing down tournament in Fontana. And the Modern Day High School team was there. Now, they were playing under another name because you can't play under your high school name. But Coach Rawlinson was there, and the whole coaching staff was there. And, you know, he wasn't playing. He got banged up, I think, in a tournament before. And so we were just kind of hanging out. We were talking Fortnite and talking Rainbow Six Siege and talking video games or whatever. And I'd seen Sean Dollars walk by, and Sean Dollars had his SC shirt on. It's another guy that I don't know if I would say he's a heavy lean, because we got to figure out what's going to happen with this running back position. He really likes USC. I think Wilmore's a little more, yeah, probably USC. It's USC and kind of Utah right now that he's looking at, but I think USC is kind of in the lead for him. Sean Dollars, we kind of have to see a little more what's going to happen, and we have to see sort of how hard USC recruits him also. But Sean walked by with his SC shirt on that I think he got passed down from Chris Hawkins. And I said, hey, Sean, I want to get a picture of you in your SC shirt for SC fans. You know, they can love that. And so he came over, and Brew goes, oh, yeah, that, I like that shirt. That's a good look. And I was kind of a little bit of a nod, like, yeah, you know, Brew likes USC too. And so, yeah, I would say Brew's up there. In terms of offensive line, which is probably one of the biggest positions to recruit this next year, Ta'anu is going to be a big player for them, 6'6", 315, heavy lean. He's been a, you know, probably more – I know he's been to more spring practice than I have at this point. So that's a big guy. Sean Ryan. I don't know if I would see Sean Ryan's at – I don't know enough about Sean Ryan yet. I haven't talked to him enough personally to necessarily say he's a heavy lean to USC, but I think USC is definitely among his – top 2-3 schools. Samapama, who's a big guard out of Hawaii. I think he's from Kapolei. I can't remember if he's from Honolulu or Kapolei, but that's a 6'5", 325-pound guard. Really the only guard that's on the kind of the recruiting target list right now that we're looking at that's, you know, kind of listed as a guard, ranked as a guard right now. But another guy that really, you know, USC is a childhood favorite. He's never been in the mainland. So, you know, you kind of take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, because obviously he's got to take some visits before he knows what he really wants. But, I mean, that's a guy that you could see if he took take a visit to USC during the summer or something and just really loves it. Johnny Nansen, man, that guy, the Island Whisperer, he freaking gets those guys committed. Wouldn't be shocked if he flipped and turned around and committed to USC right away. So it is a long list. I mean, you're talking about, like, I'm basically outlining what the whole class would be at this point. You're probably talking about 4 to 5 offensive linemen and all those guys that they really have at the top of their list. Right now, a lot of them are leaning to USC.
All
end
right.
The podcast. There you go. We can end it right there.
Bam. I love it. We got a bear secutor question. Seems like USC is not sleeping on Sean Dollars or Jordan Wilmore, and certainly there is room in 2019 for both. If senior Sedware balls out this year, what are the chances Drevno could sign both?
It's possible, definitely. No, they're going to sign two running backs at least. They have to. So to the running back position, they're going to definitely sign two guys. I think they sort of just want to figure out, is it going to be two or is it going to be three? If it's three, then I think, yeah, you can get both of those guys in there. If it's only two, there might be an either or. They might, and you got to throw another guy in here, and that's Keenan Christian as well, the running back from San Diego, who's at 5'10", about 180 pounds, who's a guy that has some really good track times right now. He's like a 10'7 guy, probably going to get in that 10'6 range before it's all said and done this spring as a track guy. And that's an intriguing player there too. Haven't seen a lot of him. Saw him at one passing tournament. He got hurt. I think he rolled his ankle at the opening. So we really didn't get to see him do much there. But you know, the running backs, you know, what do you get to see it from them at camps that are non-contact anyways. But that's a very intriguing guy as well. So you've got a few all purpose backs there. You've got a few of those guys, that can kind of, you know, playing in the slot, and they can move around a little bit. It's going to be maybe a possible either-or situation. Who do we get that's going to be the smaller, quicker, more dynamic guy? And then who do we pair him with that might be the bigger guy? You know, a guy like maybe Zach Charbonnet, who's a 6'2", 210-pound running back from Oaks Christian, who I think I got asked about on the podcast the last time we did it, and a guy that I really like his film a lot. And there's another guy that plays outside linebacker and shows you his physicality and his toughness and his aggressiveness. But then you put the ball in his hands, and he's a really good-looking athlete. Just a guy that's kind of off the radar that a lot of people are not talking about that don't really know about, but a very good player. And certainly, you know, would complement getting a smaller all-purpose back like Dollars or Wilmore. So the question right now kind of with me looking and projecting is just sort of who do you like more out of that all-purpose group? Because there's no guarantee USC is going to be able to go get three. They could, but we're kind of looking at two right now. And in that scenario, I kind of feel like there's an either or with that all-purpose position. And so is it going to be Wilmore, who has the better film? Is it going to be Dollars, who's really good 7-on-7, really good hands, but testing-wise hasn't necessarily shown a great deal of speed just from a clock standpoint? So that's got to be a question. If you're not a bigger back, then you got to have some speed or some quickness or something from a time standpoint that kind of reinforces that notion that you are a guy that's going to be dynamic at that position. And then you got a guy like Keenan Christian, who has really he's kind of the other end of the spectrum. He has the times. He has the clock speed officially that you're kind of looking for at that position, but maybe not necessarily the same film and not quite the same in-person evaluations that we've been able to make this spring. So that's kind of how I see that standing right now. That's kind of the status of the running back position.
We got Mike and Diamond Bar sent a text in. Maybe I'll address this first and then you can chime in. With our recruiting numbers sitting at 82, will we be able to bring in 28 in the 2019 recruiting cycle? Love the podcast, Mike and Diamond Bar. So Mike's talking about, if you look on uscfootball.com, you go to the three little dots at the top of the page and go to scholarship distribution chart. We show you, you know, how many players are on scholarship or projected for 2018. And right now it's 82. So that's three under the 85 limit. He basically added three to the 25 you can bring in each year and came up with 28. So I think your math is bad there. just to be, you know, not trying to be mean, Mike and Diamond Bar. But yeah, so basically, yes, they're three under the limit right now. But the limit you're going to run into next year, and Gerard kind of alluded to this, would be the 25 number. So there are only 17 seniors right now listed on the roster. Gerard was speculating maybe bringing in 22 players. So those 17 come off the books. And then, you know, well, I guess 17 plus the three. So that would be 20. Plus a couple, you know, guys that will leave early, any attrition. So I think 22 is probably right. But 28, you can't sign more than 25. So that really wouldn't be a realistic number. But what do you think,
Gerard? Yeah. No, that answers the question. And I'm saying 22, 23 is possible. We saw with this past class, you know, USC was, we said all along, kind of 21 would be the number that they were looking for. And then it didn't seem like it would be 21 there for a while because we didn't know, you know, from the transfer standpoint or guys medically retiring. There's a lot of those things that you just don't really know where guys sit. And you have to project anyway. So it started going, maybe it's only going to be 18 or 19. But originally, I mean, I heard 21 from the jump. And now, right now, I'm hearing 22 or 23. So there's probably some expectations of some more transfers and guys that just fall through the cracks in addition to having some overhead room. You're always going to have a little overhead room. Coaches like to be more in that 82, 83 range just so they can give some of those walk-ons potential scholarships, or you can have somebody transfer in that's a grad transfer. You always want to have a little bit of leeway, some flexibility there on the roster that you can bring another guy in on scholarship later.
And then some years there's like obvious dudes that'll probably leave as juniors. I don't think there's really any obvious guys like, you know, Michael Pittman, like he could leave. He's a true junior, I guess. But there's not really anyone that's sort of standing out to me. I don't know. Do you see anyone like Akili Ross, Jack Jones? Like, I don't know. There's not like a Juju and a Dory where you definitely know they're leaving, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. But I mean, you didn't necessarily think that Deontay Burnett was going to leave early either.
True.
And Rasheem Green was a guy that was kind of, I think until later in the season where he had a few games that you kind of thought, you know, there's probably an argument with his body and his frame and sort of the potential that he has there. He's very young, that teams might give him a higher grade. And so it's hard sometimes. I mean, you say Jack Jones. Yeah, I think that's a guy that potentially in his own mind thinks that he might be ready to make the early jump. I think with Imam Marshall not leaving early, I think that sort of maybe paves the way to, yeah, you probably want to stay an extra year, because I think right now at this point, you know, where Iman Marshall was and where Jack Jones is, I think Iman was probably farther ahead in the game. I think he had probably established himself a little more than Jack Jones has. I mean, certainly that's debatable, but I think neither of those guys is really ready or on track to be a three-year guy. So I think that, you know, with Iman returning, I think that definitely makes it more likely that that Jack Jones will return. But again, I mean, it's completely, you know, guy has a good season and you never know, you know, the agents get in his ear and he decides that, hey, you know what, I can take off. And I think really the bigger thing is going to be transfers, you know, and that's probably going to be the bigger question mark. If guys that have been in the program a couple years, they don't feel like they're going to be able to move on and get that playing time, they're just going to go somewhere else.
All right, let's do another voicemail. Here you go.
JD from DC with this week's recruiting question for Gerard GM. Have you ever seen a more advanced or impressive linebacker out west as a sophomore than Justin Flo?
Well, I mean, Vontaze Burfict was right up there. I mean, Vontaze could do some things that Flo can't. Vontaze, I think, just his space, his agility, his ability, his footwork. I think covering was just tremendous for a 240-pound linebacker. He was a little bigger than Flo was, just I think in terms of weight-wise, you know, he carried a little more weight, but the explosiveness and the agility was still there. And so, I mean, I just can remember him at the Nike camps running down there 30 yards. He could cover like Raymond Scott could cover. And Raymond Scott is one of the better guys that we've seen in coverage over the years at these camps, you know, where you're playing in space. And it's really difficult for the linebackers to play against those running backs in space. You got to have great hips. You got to have great agility, great balance, great eyes. And Raymond Scott really had that. But, you know, 20 pounds more and probably 3 inches, Vontaze Burfict was that guy as well. So I'd say Vontaze Burfict definitely right up there. Flo is got a little more length, actually, than Burfict does. I think he's a little longer in the arms. He doesn't weigh quite as much. He's not quite as tall yet. I think he came in like 6'1.5" at the opening. I mean, he's definitely going to be in that conversation with those guys, the Manti Te'os and the Vontaze Burfict and those guys. I think he is that elite of a player. And, you know, with linebackers, you're really looking at their weaknesses in those camps and 7-on and all that kind of stuff. And so we really get to kind of pick apart his game. It's when the pads go on, those guys actually are really able to shine and they're using their physicality. And certainly with Flo, I mean, he's using his physicality in non-contact drills even as it is. So you put pads on him and he's even that much more explosive and dominant.
We got another text. This is Eddie from Whittier. He put fight on at the end of it. It's F and then 18 HT 0N. So that's like a text.
That's the hash. That's the hash. The hashtag fight on that they use for USC.
They do that one? Okay. Let's see. Ryan and staff, I want to thank you guys for the countless hours and work you guys have put into this, the site and National Signing Day. Now I can't wait for the season to come with all this new talent. 2019 recruiting starts now. So with that being said, two questions for G-Mart. Was Reggie Bush showing up to Isaac Taylor Stewart's CIF game a hidden factor in recruiting him to us? During his announcement, he did shout out Reggie. Do you think it's possible that Reggie put in a few good words to help bring him to us? I guess you'll start with that one.
No. That was Helix High School playing that game against, I think it was Paraclete that they were playing in the playoffs. And so they were playing up that way. It might not have been Paraclete. I feel like it was some team that they were playing out there in the Valley. And Reggie, I think, is living out that way. So it wasn't really that far a drive. So he just came out to support his alma mater, really. I don't think it had too much to do with Taylor Stewart. Certainly people had talked to him and probably made mention, oh yeah, they got this really good player, Isaac Taylor Stewart, that's playing for him. And, you know, I talked to Isaac when he had transferred from St. Augustine down to Helix High School. He wore number 5 at St. Augustine. And so I said, you know, dude, are you going to go for that number 5? And he's like, no, I wouldn't do that. Like, that's almost disrespectful to even ask for that number. I'm going to wear number six. I'm good for number six. So he was very aware of Reggie, you know, hadn't gone there and everything like that, and was respectful of that number and what Reggie had done at Helix High School. But Reggie showing up now, and I don't think Reggie's really up on recruiting as much. And certainly I don't get the sense that Reggie's really even that up on USC these days, probably, to know. Oh, yeah, I mean, you can assume it's a top local player. You know, USC's going to recruit him. But I don't think he had any ins and outs. And certainly he had no communication with the coaching staff about, Isaac Taylor Stewart or any other recruits. Reggie's kind of been blackballed by USC, and he's still kind of been blackballed. So I wouldn't take any assumptions there and think that, he's kind of working behind the scenes for USC recruiting.
And then a second question was, what are our chances of locking up Kayvon Thibodeau for next year early?
Another guy. That's a guy that I didn't even list in my heavy leans to USC going through the class of guys that the USC is a really good shot at. And Kayvon Thibodeau is another guy that I would put on there for sure. National recruit, a lot of people looking at him. There'll be some twists and turns in his recruitment, I'm sure. I don't think it's going to be too dramatic, but I think there'll be some schools that get in his ear and some things that go on. But I think USC is going to be tough to beat for him.
All right. We got another one from Bearsecutor.
Mace Funa, another guy that I didn't mention. It's a long list, man. I mean, I could list 20 guys right now that are heavy leans to USC.
Yeah, there's a lot. And that's why I think people were pretty optimistic when they read. So if you haven't checked out the target list, they're up on USCfootball.com. You can also, pull them up at the top of the page under the three dots that goes USC Football 2019 target list, offense and defense. So lots of stuff there. You can check that out. So Bearsecutor's question. He said, Gerard, with only 82 on the current roster, we should have plenty of rides next year. So that's something we kind of talked about. With a lot of talent out west at interior defensive line for Clancy's scheme, would USC take three of these guys if they want in? So he mentions Ware Hudson from Santa Ana, Palomal out in Phoenix. Is it Bandis in Antioch?
Bandis, yeah.
Bandis, okay. And then Tutele out in Honolulu. I hopefully pronounced his name right.
No, you didn't. Yeah. Tutele. It might not have been spelled right either, but yeah, Tutele. So the question is, three out of those guys. Well, Keon Hudson-Ware just committed to Oregon. A good player that USC had been recruiting for a while, but definitely I think more of a plan B guy. I think USC, again, Fatui, Tuateli, number one guy. Drake Jackson, which wasn't on that list. Interior, he'll be interior guy. Number one guy, plan A type guy. And I think, Matthew Palomal is potentially on that list as a number one guy. And so you have three guys right there that are heavy leaned to USC. I think, obviously Tuateli is going to be that guy that you got to battle a little more for. But I think that USC could definitely take three. I think the way they're recruiting now, they're recruiting like they're going to take three of those guys. And then perhaps, you get a little Kayvon Thibodeau in there. And Kayvon is going to be kind of the guy that's kind of have to figure out how he develops. He's a hybrid end right now. He's more of a predator type guy. And so I don't know. He wants to be 250 pounds by the time he gets on a college campus. And, the USC's defense, certainly you can be that. I mean, Port Augustine is 265 pounds, at least 270 probably. So you can still play predator and be that guy. But we have to see how he develops and how his body reacts to putting on that weight. And whether it's something that, he still has his agility, he still has some flexibility, he can play that position. Or he's a guy that, if you're going to get 250, you might as well get to 275. Just put on the weight and move inside and be more of a Drake Jackson type. But right now, yeah, they're looking at him, I think, as a predator. And he has a ways to go in terms of putting on the weight to be that 250 pounds. So I think that's he's still kind of an outside linebacker, along with Mace Funa. I actually listed Mace Funa as a Sam because we've seen him so many times. And he's around the football. He gets his hands on passes. He's really tremendous in that way. And I think in USC's defense, this from a size standpoint, you're using really a lot of two-man defensive interior linemen. You could put another big body out there on Sam, and Funa will be that guy. He'll be 260, 265. And while he's not, quite as fast probably as a guy like Uchenna Nwosu, is just as good as a pass rusher and probably even more instinctual. So right now we're listing him as a Sam. I think most people would say, yeah, he's kind of a hybrid as well, like Kayvon Thibodeau. But USC is going to try to get both those guys. So you're going to have to divvy it up. You're going to have to play one or at another position. And I think, you know, it'd be easier to probably move Funa over there because I think he definitely has more experience standing up and is a little more comfortable in space.
Now, there's been a lot of talk this spring of the potential, I just say potential, of Clancy Pendergast rotating more players. What kind of impact do you think it could have on the numbers, you know, especially on the defensive line in the recruiting cycle? Do you think if they're playing more guys, if, you know, play more than three or four guys, that helps? They want to bring in more guys. How do you think that's going to impact things?
It helps for the most part, and it hasn't really hurt them thus far. The only way it could sort of hurt is if you've got a freshman there that plays that ends up being a really good player and kind of scares off someone who's in the class that's looking, you know, to maybe commit at that position. That would really be the only way that I think it would be a negative impact. Take a guy like Jay Tufele, you know, who maybe if he played last year and would have done really well, it would have been harder to be able to sign more defensive linemen. Now, granted, they only really signed two guys that were interior guys to begin with. But that would be the argument. That would be, you know, yeah, you know, you have a bunch of guys that are playing as freshmen and they play really well. Then it's hard to bring in a great class right in back of them because they know that those guys are there as freshmen. Now you also want to sell sort of the 3-year plan and say, well, they're going to be there, but they're only going to be there for 3 years. And you potentially have 4, maybe 5 years to play. If you're going to redshirt. So it's not like, you know, you're not going to have that opportunity to play. So Alabama's been able to do it. Ohio State's been able to do it. And USC did it with Pete Carroll. You know, they're able to keep the sort of competitive motto going and saying, hey, you know what, these guys, we play freshmen. And USC's still playing a lot of freshmen. I think that's the thing that gets lost in that conversation. Technically, from a number standpoint, they're still playing a lot of freshmen. It's almost like a quota thing. But a lot of those guys are just playing on special teams. They're not necessarily making a huge impact and contributing a whole lot. So I think that's really where the criticism comes in. But you mean guys like, you know, Bubba Bolden and Giuliano Falanico, there's a few of those guys that did play last year. They did play as true freshmen, but as true freshmen, they were really only playing special teams. So they didn't contribute on the defensive side of the ball very much in game and in, you know, when you're playing actually defensive unit. So that's where the criticism comes in. I think USC would be fine playing more guys. I think it would help recruiting, but there is always that argument, and it's really more isolated, you know, situations where you may have one recruit that is looking at that and looking at the depth chart and seeing that, you know, oh, I mean, it's like with JT Daniels. The big question is, does Jaden Daniels want to follow right behind JT Daniels if JT Daniels is a starter as a freshman? Because obviously that limits the amount of time Jaden Daniels is going to be able to have to go in and star for a team. So that does become a little bit of a question.
All right, we got Scotty in HB. He says, if you look at the current roster, which player did you feel that you were the most accurate in your assessment of him during high school, and which one player hasn't met your expectations? Thanks for all you guys. For all your guys' info, fight on, Scotty and HB.
That's a tough question. You know, a lot of the guys, from a standpoint of being able to toot my own horn, the guys that were freshmen, like Stephen Carr, for instance, knew Stephen Carr would be a guy that would get on the field and play. I didn't think he would probably be as notable early on in fall camp as he was. I mean, shoot, he was out there like second day and the coaches are going, oh yeah. Oh yeah. He might be our best running back, which I thought it would just take longer for them to kind of come to that conclusion. It wasn't really because I doubted Steven at all. I just doubted USC recognizing that he would be a guy that you should insert in the lineup almost immediately. So, I mean, none of those guys have really been, you know, it's not a shocker on how they played. I would say, you know, going back, not even on the current roster, but just last year's roster, and to admit, I didn't think Sam Darnold was going to be as good as he was. And I had people at USC that told me, yeah, this dude's going to be great. I had one, I'll just say it. Gavin Morris told me when he was on the scout team, this dude could be like Tom Brady good. And I said, Gavin, come on, man. Like, you think you're going to reach that far? Like, let's take this in increments. Like, we didn't, you know, and I've heard this before from coaches, you know, the next guy up is always going to be better, right? You know, I heard from a coach at USC, it's no longer at USC, how great Max Brown was going to be. You know, it was like, Cody Kessler, yeah, he's okay. But when we get a real quarterback in here, quote unquote, when we get a real quarterback that can throw the ball downfield and master the offense, we're going to be unstoppable, quote unquote. And obviously, Max Brown didn't work out at USC that way. But then you put in, you know, Sam Darnold, and Gavin was tooting his horn, a lot of other people. But I seen him play in high school, and he just did not do those crazy Houdini-type escape artist moves in high school from a running standpoint. You know, he was agile and semi-athletic, and he had a really good arm, and I thought he was a good player. But just didn't think he was going to be the guy who he ended up being. So, I mean, and I'll take another one on the chin, and I'll say Tyler Vaughns has kind of exceeded my expectations. I just didn't know how much drive and how physical he wanted to be, you know. And in high school, he was a guy that could make big plays, but it was a lot of 50-50 balls. And I just wondered if somebody got up at the line of scrimmage and pressed him, is he going to be able to fight back? Is he going to be able to step up and fight through those type of battles in man coverage against really good defensive backs that are a little bigger and have a little more height? And he's been able to do that. He's shown he's got great hands. He's got that great athletic ability, and he's done a lot of things he did in high school, even at this level. So that's another guy that sort of exceeded my expectations. Now, there's a lot of guys that have, you know, watched and said great things about that have gone on and they've been good, you know, and they that's pretty much what I thought, you know, we would expect from that particular player. But those are guys that sort of on the opposite end of the spectrum, probably undervalued and maybe underappreciated a little bit coming out of high school.
Yeah, it's funny, like Vaughns, I always liked, and I remember, I think I've told this before, like talking with Keyshawn Johnson at one of his games, and Keyshawn wasn't real high on him. Like, dude, I just like the way he makes plays. And I loved watching Trayvon Sidney. Now, we haven't seen him really produce in college yet. We'll see. But he could just make all those one-handed catches. He was a lot of fun. The linebackers, you remember from a couple years ago. So it was like Cameron Smith, John Houston, was it Porter Gustin and Osa Messina, right? All on the same.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone thought right. Cam Smith would be the guy coming out of the gate and playing as much as he did. But we liked the way he played. He just would always get in these one-on-one situations with these small running backs. And he wasn't the best in coverage all the time. But you couldn't really see, he was the best with the pads on, and we didn't get to see a lot of that, him being like a NorCal guy, right? We saw him a lot just in shorts and t-shirts, so I think he's someone that exceeded our expectations, especially with the guys that surrounded him.
Now, when you say R, you got to own that, because I would not necessarily put myself into that. I saw him in pads, and he was really good, and he's really smart, and I always knew. And it's nice, you know, I'm making myself look like a punk in the past year.
No. You're right.
No, I knew it all along that he was going to be great. But I did know, just because I'd seen him play in pads, you know, in Granite Bay. And he was a dude. I mean, he was dominant that way. And he was definitely, yeah, it's a different game. And that's the thing. That's what I say with linebackers and running backs. And linebackers specifically, when you're watching them in camps and you're watching them in these seven-on-sevens, and this is, we're watching their weaknesses. Like, you have to look at, this is a weak point. This is something that they really don't have to be great at. And so it's really icing on the cake if they can cover in space and do that. And yeah, we watched Cameron Smith. He got abused a few times against guys that were just, whatever, tight end. Some just random guy went to Rutgers or something like that. And we're at the, you know, the five-star challenge in Baltimore or Chicago, I think, at that point. And we're just watching, you know, some pretty good players that they're running by him. And I'm like, yeah, but that's Cam Smith. I mean, that's not his game. That's not what he's going to do real well. And that's probably why he didn't leave early. You know, he's got to show a little more of being a three-down linebacker instead of just a two-down guy. I mean, I think John Houston is a guy that a lot of people doubted. And they doubt him at the beginning of the year. You know, they just as recently as probably midway through last season, they were like, he's such a weak link in the defense. But he's just, and I said at the beginning of the season, I said he's got probably a year and a half ahead of him before he's going to kind of be his guy. So, I mean, if I want to chew my horn, I almost put a date on that. I was like, yeah, John Houston by November 1st will be a really good player for USC, because I just knew Yeah, he's almost there. He's got like another 10, 15 pounds he's got to put on, and he's still developing. He's still going to be a guy that needs to continue to get better and get bigger. But, I mean, I always watched him in high school. I felt like he was a Sunday guy. I felt like he was a guy that had the demeanor, the leadership, the smarts, the athleticism. He had a lot of it. It was just a matter of showing people that you've got the physicality and showing people that you've got the strength and just the power to be able to play the position and not get, you know, overwhelmed by blocks and everything. So he's still learning. He's still got to get lower. He's got to drop his ass a little bit sometimes and be able to stack and shed a little better. But he's been a guy that, you know, sort of thus far has been really good. And but he's got a long ways to go. When I say he's a Sunday player, obviously he's still got a long ways to go before he can prove that he's that guy.
Yeah, and I like Cameron Smith, actually. I mean, but I just like...
No, you didn't. No. You can't go back. You already said that you hated him and you said he's going to be terrible.
No, I never said that. I called Dallas Sartz, who was one of his coaches, and got
That's right.
Yeah, I remember getting a lot of good things from him. But I loved... I like Porter Gustin better. I liked Osa Messina better. And probably... he was probably my fourth favorite of those guys. But I thought they were all going to be good and all going to play. Obviously, Messina's, you know, career got...
tragedy, man. That's just what a tragedy that is. That he was probably like kind of had it all. You know, I mean, we watched him at the Army All-American practices, and he's 240, and he's running down there ahead of everybody on kickoff return and just leveling people. And you're like, holy crap. I mean, this guy has it all. He has the athleticism. He has the size. And then he showed up at USC, and he'd like dropped 20 pounds. And we're going, what the hell's going on here?
He looked better in high school than he did at USC. It was weird.
Yeah. Well, we heard, you know, we found out later that there's a lot of drugs and alcohol and stuff going on and things that, you know, certainly they inhibit you a little bit in terms of how much you're going to grow and get stronger. Yeah, he actually, I mean, it wasn't just he lost weight. He actually looked weaker. He's running around with no shirt on. It's like, wait a second. This dude looked better a few months ago at the Army All-American game. Now he's, you know, what the hell? That was a weird thing. You called that too. You kept talking about that. You kept bringing it up like, why does this guy look so much weak? He looks like a regular dude out there right now.
Yes.
And then we were watching him, you know, at the Army game, and we seen him, you know, during other camps and stuff. And he looked like, you know, he was a big strapping young kid. And it was kind of, I guess, a prelude, a little bit of a red flag there.
Yeah. Porter definitely got bigger and also did not. He got smaller. It was strange. I think throw a couple names at you real quick. I got a deadline coming up. But when I got to go to Hawaii to see Jordan Iosefa, see him in person in pad, like, I thought he was a dude. Like, okay, this guy can play. But I also thought, like, Connor Murphy and Oluwole Batiku were going to have a bigger impact than they have already. Maybe those are a couple I missed on. What do you think about those three guys?
Murphy. I'm waiting for Connor Murphy to get a shot because I think he's a guy. I've seen him in practice at USC, and I think he's a guy. Oluwole Batiku, a little stiff, a little situational, very, very raw. So I'm not surprised that he's still kind of waiting in the wings a little bit. But Connor Murphy's a guy that I've seen him at practice, and a guy that I'm gonna almost put the Christian Rector label on him because I kind of had the Christian Rector thing there and said, yeah, he's got to play more. Like, I don't get it. I'm seeing him in practice, and a dude looks like he can play, and then you see him in games, and he looks like he can play, little flashes of him. I'd like to see more Connor Murphy. I think he's a guy that I think would have made a bigger impact, but then when I've seen him at practice, it's not just one of those things we watched him in high school. We didn't see him a lot in person in high school. It was really more tape, but having watched him at practice and watched him when he was with the outside linebackers at a guy that's 6'7", 260, he moves better than Oluwole Batiku. He's more fluid. He's more flexible. He's better in terms of being in space. Now he's moved down. He's playing legitimate defensive end, put on a little weight. I want to see him be a guy. The thing about Clancy, I think he, you know, it's college. You just got to throw those guys in there sometimes. And they're trial by fire when they're forced to be in there because of injury. You see how some of these guys have ended up playing. Really, that's Christian Rector's, how he ended up being a guy that could kind of anchor himself and get into that starting lineup. It was because of injuries. It wasn't because, hey, let's just try Christian Rector because he's playing well in practice. And so it's almost like, USC's had been forced to rotate some of those guys in. And then when they have to stay in there, you don't have any other alternative. Then they kind of, and Akili Ross will throw out there too, is another guy that, if you see it there in practice, you see those flashes. He's going to make mistakes, but the only way they're going to sort of have the light bulb go off is if you keep him in there. And you just got to deal with those mistakes. You just got to swallow those errors, and then you're going to have the upside of when they finally get it, they're going to be really good players for you.
One last thing. I did a Pac-12 podcast with David Woods from Bro. You can go to Pac-12podcast.com and check it out. But we talked a lot about Herm Edwards today. I recorded that earlier today. So if you missed it, he came out and basically said, along the lines of he was calling out players that were spending too much time in the training room. If you can't get film, we can't evaluate you. And he felt that was a way to motivate guys to come back out. Also basically said along the lines of, if we don't like you and we don't feel you can help and you're not going to play, we only play 45 guys in a game, we'll cut you. And it's not that you'll take your scholarship away. You'll just be off the football team and you can still go to school, but we're going to move on from you as a football player. So something that certainly happens in all through college football, but it's not talked about. It's like behind the scenes sort of thing. You go up to a player, say, look, man, you're never going to play. A lot of times ends up being a guy transferring out or whatever. Not necessarily just if you stay on, it's usually like a medical retirement. USC's had a couple of guys do that already where they're going to stay in school. They'll still be on scholarship, but they won't count towards the 85. It kind of works out for everybody. But to actually say you're going to come out and cut people, instant reaction on Twitter, Gerard, was you can negatively recruit against that so easily. What are your thoughts on what Herm said? And is that something that's going to really hurt them as far as recruiting goes?
Yes, I agree. It is easy to recruit against, and it will be used against ASU. But I do actually kind of applaud him for just being upfront about it and calling it like it is, because you become cynical covering the recruiting process and covering the teams and kind of knowing how things work, as opposed to the face that a lot of these programs and coaches put on the moves that they make. And so you get a little tired of that. And it's nice to see somebody come out and just say, hey, look, this is how it's going to work. I mean, we're not going to take your scholarship away, but we are going to cut you because you can't contribute. Now, the bigger issue for me, if I'm an ASU fan, is just seeing how out of touch Herm Edwards is in terms of how many players you're actually going to use. Because now we know, having covered USC, they had, I think, 53 guys at one point when Steve Sarkisian took over. How that is not enough at the college level, that you're not going to be able to survive in playing 45 players. So that shows you he's a little out of touch with the college game as opposed to the pro game. Obviously, with the pros, you're paying those guys. It's a different mentality. They're out there trying to provide for their families. These are kids, and the incentive for them to go out there and to play hurt is just not – it's just not there as much. And certainly the amount of players that you put out there for a game, and certainly the amount of players that you have to have for a practice is not 45. And so I think some of his outspoken little diatribes and the things that he's had since he's been hired, I think it's more of he's very out of touch with college football. He's very out of touch with rules. He's very out of touch with just how things have to go running a program. And I think that's the bigger issue and probably the scarier thing for ASU when they actually start playing games and he has to start making decisions and game time decisions, how you're going to play players, how you're going to rotate, and just how you're going to call a game.
Yeah. I kind of feel – I talked to Dave about this. I feel it was sort of like off the cuff. And then he didn't realize like the implications of what he was saying. And then later on, the people, the powers that be around him were like, hey, man, you can't really say that. There is a rule, though. Like if you get a new coach in, a player can retire, basically, if they don't like the coach and continue to get their scholarship. And a coach can cut a player if they're not getting along, and they can continue to get the scholarship. So there's a rule that Chris Cartman tweeted out. So there's actually he's allowed to do it. But it's just like no one ever comes out and says, hey, we're going to cut people. Because then if you're like, I'm looking at ASU, I'm like, well, I hope you make the two deep. Otherwise, you could get cut. That's basically how it would go.
And there's a rule actually up that they're going to vote on that you can actually transfer just with the new coach coming in, which has got a lot of people wondering. And I think we've talked about it even on the podcast where you could actually transfer out just because you don't, the coach, as long as you don't transfer to the school that coach went to, You can leave. And they haven't specified if that's a window of time which you can transfer. You can just transfer at any point after a new coach is hired and you weren't, you know, signed by that coach with your letter of intent. So there are some things that are there that kids may have a little more choices and they may have some alternatives when they bring in a new coaching staff. But like I said, I think anything, it's just, you know, Herm not being aware. You know, he seems a little unaware of the context of what he's saying and how it does impact the program going forward. But I think more of an issue, again, it's just sort of a symptom of a bigger issue of him being out of touch with college football and sort of what he's going to have to do and how he's going to have to run a program and what you can get away with and what's just not going to work. 45 players is not going to work for a college football team.
All right. Well, that's Gerard Martinez. I got to do a radio interview. So I think we wrapped it up in an hour. Perfect, Gerard. Nice job.
Boom.
Way to go. I thought that was great. I think people like it. There was good conversation, good questions, good chat. So talking about the peristyle. Thanks again, Gerard, for coming on.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
All right. That's Gerard Martinez. I'm Ryan Abraham. This is the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. Hope you enjoyed this episode and we will talk to you next time.